questions and answers, right?
Yep.
Okay. You can shut that off.
Thank you.
You bet. Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Rayanne, and I am a grateful...
Hi.
I am a grateful recovering compulsive eater. I first want to thank Siobhan for covering me this morning. Thank you so much. Judy for her elegant, angelic patience, who didn't at all panic when I went, who is this and what are you saying? I had my days confused, which is something I do with great regularity. I hold in my hands the book of Alcoholics Anonymous because it is, it saved my life. And as we were all sitting here playing and reciting, and every time we said the word God, I was jolted, right? Very often when we talk about the Serenity Prayer, we get right to grant, right? God, grant me the serenity to, who are we asking?
God.
Yeah. God is big. I had a sponsor once when I used to call whining. This happened. He'd be, get a bigger God, click. What? What? I did not walk into these rooms to get a bigger God. I came in to get a smaller butt. That's just true. And then that happened. So on May 28th-ish, I have a sponsor in another program who said, you should call Laura and talk to her about food. I said, oh, okay, because I'm good at food. Food I got, and food I can talk about. I said, okay, hi, Laura, this is Rayanne, and Linda said I should talk to you about food. And suddenly, a woman who I knew in another program, but I didn't know a whole lot of things about, told me my story with her name on it. I thought we were going to talk about food. Yeah, wrong. We talked about Hashimoto's disease, because I have that. She had that. We talked about recovery and AA, because I am that, and so is she. And then she started talking about OA. And I got really, really angry. Because lo these many years, I didn't want to talk about that. The first 12-step meeting I walked into in 1987 was an OA meeting. And the woman who said she'd be my sponsor, which I didn't know what that was, obviously, because I was walking into my first 12-step meeting ever, I thought she was going to pay me money. She was going to sponsor me. I was all about that. I was like, I'll wear your sign all day long. No. She said, we should talk about your alcohol. I said, oh, let's talk about my alcohol. Shiny object. All recovering people like shiny objects. I got her to look at that for another couple days, and by the time we were finished talking about my alcohol, I didn't want to talk about my food at all. She said, all right, so you go to AA meetings, but give up sugar. Okay, I'll do that. Now, mind you, I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not pretending that I got anything over on her. If anything, she tricked me into getting sober. But I didn't talk about food again for more than 20 years. And so when Laura started talking and telling me her story, I was so angry because I had done everything I was supposed to not to have to have this conversation. I had exercised, I had starved, I had not eaten that, I had eaten that, I had stopped eating that, right? So at the end of that conversation, and I was completely outed, I said, I hate you. I never want to speak to you again. And will you be my sponsor? And so many, many years sober, I'm going to put my very big book down for a second. Oh, it's going to make a noise, and that's not going to be bad. I was a very willing service-giving, recovering alcoholic. And yet, at the end of that conversation, when she said, yes, I'll be your sponsor, call me tomorrow at 8 a.m., my response was, we'll see. My response was, we'll see for a week. We'll see. And every day I call her at 8 a.m. She talked to me for 15 minutes about what she did and what she ate and what I should do and how her plan worked and what God was and wasn't. And she said, I'll talk to you tomorrow. I said, we'll see. Hang up the phone. On the morning of June 5th, 2012, I turned over my food and have had abstinent days since that day. Every day, including weekends. And no one's more surprised than me, stone cold sober, that food wasn't the issue. And that just makes me crazy. It does, it just makes me crazy. Because I didn't, I thought I had a pretty big God. I thought I had a pretty big spiritual life. I really did. What I know now, more than I've ever known it before, is that this disease that holds us by the heart and the throat on any given day, whether you're abstinent or not, is so not about the substance that I have fixated on. It's not about the man, it's not about the money. It's not about the job, it's not about the house, it's not about my new shoes. It is about a sincere and absolute lack of a belief that there is anything bigger than me. That there's anything that can help me, that there's anything out there that can change me, comfort me, love me. Faith versus fear is what came up for me today as I was getting the phone call saying, are you coming? Because I immediately went into fear. Immediately went into fear. I'm not where I'm supposed to be. I was supposed to do something. Oh, dear God, well, something's gone terribly wrong. Believing at all for 1 second and for many minutes after that I was in control. So this happened. I was part of it. In real time, the angel on the other end of the phone said, well, we, you know, we got this, Siobhan's here, we could do that. And we thought, okay, we'll see you at 1:15, click. All done, all fixed, all good. Now, I even then, I couldn't be in the good, in the all fine. I had to go into the, what the heck happened, and why didn't I know that, and where was I, where's my schedule? So I took a prayer. Matt Talbot prayer book, handed it to my boyfriend. I said, could you read something for me out of that? And he read for me the prayer for the hurried. And I was grateful. I want, always when I stand at a podium, I want to give you exactly what you need to hear so that you will live every day of your life from this moment on abstinent and in faith. And I know it's not my job. I know my job is to share my experience. So I will tell you that that first year that I was working on my abstinence at a day at a time, I've never in my life been more afraid of relapse. Because the thing that brought me to the conversation about food was a conversation with my mother after I had juiced for 30 days. Because gluten might be problematic for those who have Hashimoto's disease. So what does a crazy person do who belongs in these rooms? We juice. There's no gluten in juice. Of course, there's nothing chewable either, but never mind. I juiced for 30 days, lost 30 pounds, all is well. My 30 days was up on a Thursday, and by Tuesday I'd gained 17 of that back. And my mother said, but won't you gain all that back? Oh, now I'm mad at her. Because of course I already was. But in a moment of clarity where the adult in me stood up, the sober woman showed up for just a moment and said, I don't know how many of these I have left in me. And what I meant was starvation. And everyone in this room nods and smiles. Do you know what the people out there do when I say starvation is just a way of life? They're horrified, as well they should be. Right? Because normal people don't think starvation is an idea for a new world. Like, oh yeah, let's try that. Excellent. So, I don't know how many of these I have left in me sparked the understanding that the age of 49, or just 50 at that time, I was about to live the rest of my life exactly the way I had lived the first part of my life, the majority of my life, if there's a God, in fear, hating my body, completely alone and isolated, and without any idea, true idea, of how to make that stop. I really didn't. Stone cold sober. With a big God, lots of sponsees, and working the steps of Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous regularly. This fraction of my disease was winning. Still in this moment, I cannot believe that God was the answer. Even though absolutely the answer. This is a spiritual program based on the 12 steps. If you don't have a God and you're not working the steps, what are you doing here? What are you waiting for? I was too proud to walk into a meeting that I wasn't working the program. And I think that probably cost me many, 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 many years of self-hatred and denial. So I'm not saying if you're not working hard enough, don't be here. Be here. What I tell newcomers all the time is please stay. Just stay. But I also tell them, I know that it feels like I'm asking you to give me your oxygen and telling you that you'll be able to breathe. Right? I know that. I know that. I know it. I know it from the bottom of my gut. Because still in this moment, if you tell me, if you count up my days for me and tell me in all these days you have not eaten sugar or gluten, I couldn't believe it. And I couldn't believe that I had done it. And you know why? Because I didn't. I didn't. What I did do was work the steps. What I did do was turn my food over. What I did do was pray. I prayed. Sometimes I prayed to be quiet, as have many others in my life, I might add. Sometimes I prayed to be still. Sometimes I prayed to sit through the discomfort that I was experiencing. Now, the greatest gift of hindsight, and I'm sorry for those of you under 25 who aren't even sure what that word means, right? But the greatest gift of hindsight, in fact, I would offer, or the only, I keep saying hindsight, what I mean is age. Aging is hindsight. Oh, I'll keep coming back. The greatest gift of age is hindsight. Because what I know for sure is that in all those days when I was so uncomfortable that I felt like I wanted to rip my skin off, I did not die. And I got to the other side, and the sun came out, and I was still loved, and I still loved, and I still had hope. Maybe on some days not as much as other days, but there was always something to be hopeful about. And usually, frankly, way more than I could have imagined. The last 2.5 years of my life have been so remarkably challenging, I can't begin to tell you. And yet my God has gotten exponentially bigger for the challenges. The dissolution of a marriage, of a business, bankruptcy, giving up my dream home, the man in my life whom I adore, going through 2 brain surgeries, coming out on the other side with a new adventure in bipolar that was the result or discovery of this brain surgery extravaganza. And God did some crazy things in the process. And yet, still, at the end of each day, I'd be like, "Ooh, we did it." And I did it with you, and I did it without you. But I never did it without God. You know, I'm still, in many ways, still that very stubborn woman. You know, born in Kansas City, Missouri, to a mom who had no idea what she had just done. I was compulsively eating by the time I was 2. She would put me to bed, tuck me in. We'd say my prayers, put me in bed, tuck me in. And the last thing, love you too. Mommy, what's for breakfast? And, you know, making a note. Trust me, you couldn't just say, "Oh, we'll have eggs." No, what's on the menu, sister? I need to know. Because when I wake up in the morning, that's what I'll be expecting. Because I was always planning to eat. So what happens now in this abstinent life that I live? When I'm hungry, I pay attention. Because I have enough food. My food plan is very simple. It's very strong. My God lover. But Laura said to me, we will never have a food plan that we can't live with for the rest of our lives. That's called a diet. So I was like, oh, okay, good. So from day one, I was eating way more than I ever ate on a diet. And I brought a little more than 100 pounds. And I have lived within 5-6 pounds of that without thinking, although I will admit, some days, I only get on the scale once a month, and when I do, and I see that it's gone up rather than down, I go, "Oh my God, oh my God," and then I remember, "Oh wait, no, it's cool. I got a God. I'm abstinent. I got a whole program that tells me that this means nothing, really." And I wish that I could tell you. I look at it and go, "Oh, that's the number. That's the number. Oh, that's fine. That's just a number. I'm getting there. I'm getting there." Why? How do I know I'm getting there? Because I don't think about the scale on the days that I'm not weighing myself. All right, so that's good. But on the days that I'm hungry, on the days that I think, "Ooh, are these pants too tight? Ooh, do you think I can?" On those days, I double down in prayer and service. I got to tell you, I was cranky. Well, we know I was cranky this morning because I didn't know where I was supposed to be. But when we talked about sponsorship and who sponsors, and all these hands went up so proud. Who's willing to sponsor? You heard me. The woman in front of me, I went, "Oh, hell," and stood up. We save each other. I put my hand in yours. And together we can do what we could never do alone. So I'm telling you who are looking for a sponsor, if someone sponsors, speak to them. I'm not asking them to be willing. I'm asking you to be eager. Because everybody wants to sponsor somebody who's going to do the work. Nobody wants to babysit an eater. Right? Do not negotiate with your sponsor. Let's have some sponsorship rules, shall we? No negotiation. I think you should do 3 meetings a week. You know, I know, and here's what I was thinking. You don't get to think. Thinking is not your job. I tell my sponsees on a regular basis, please no new ideas while I'm gone. Please don't have any good ideas today. Right? You sponsor and then you tell me. I'm just saying. I love it when my sponsees get sponsees. They call me, they're like, "They're crazy." I'm like, "I know!" Exactly! They're crazy! A couple of things that I have learned that I think are vital to my recovery. And one is about sponsorship and one is about just me. I require my sponsees to speak to me in recovering terms. I ask them to talk to me about what does that mean, what step does that feel like that's attached to? Is there a defect that goes with that? I'm not your friend. Because I would never, I would never speak to my friends the way I speak to my sponsees. I would have no friends. That's not strictly speaking, that's not true. I do it with love and compassion. But when I say, please don't have any good ideas and shut up, that doesn't really go over well with your friends. And sometimes with a sponsee, I'm saving their lives because that's how mine was saved. I know it's old school. And if you don't like it, you can have every pound that you walked in here with. Recovery is a miracle. But miracles aren't always pretty or delightful, right? But they're always miraculous. So I ask them to speak to me in recovering terms. I ask them to speak to me in this context of this program. I'm sorry your husband doesn't understand, truly. Now, you can get on page 67 and find out what that means. Page 67 in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, the inventory is always mine, never the other man's. It doesn't matter what they've done. And it's not because they're not wrong or shouldn't be spanked. They're probably all of the above. And you're right. But you tell me how right feels. How does righteous feel? Well, it feels like eating in my world. It feels just like hunger. It feels just like deserving a cookie. That's what it feels like. The other thing that I know for sure, and I hope that this doesn't freak you out, my recovery at the end of the day is between me and God. Because you will let me down. Not because you're not right, but because I have expectations that will take you out of your goodness. I need you to be fill in the blank. I need you to say, here's the script. I need my sponsor to... I need to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. The steps are written in such a way that ask people to help people. But ultimately, the recovery is with God. Okay, and if that makes you uncomfortable, you can say your higher power or puppy or whatever it is you need to call it. I call it God. Because it's a universal understanding of a power greater than ourselves. That's why. In my culture, P.S., not in the world, in my culture, God is the word that is used that I grew up with. So it's just shorthand. So if you're focusing on anything like that that's going to keep you from being free in this work, then call it something else. Right? Just do yourself a favor and drop the rock already. Faith and fear are not mutually exclusive. I had faith coming here today, but I had a lot of fear about what it is I was meant to tell you. Because of the work I have done, because of the reading I have done, because of the whippings I have gotten from sponsors, because of the love, the tough love I have shared with sponsees, and because of the listening I have done in these meetings and at workshops, I have the faith that when I come to the podium and I get out of the way, I'll have something for you that's for you. For just this room, for just today. I never tell my story the same way twice. The facts of the story are still the same. But the great thing about inventory is that I have found out that I wasn't always as open to my own experience as I am now, as I become. I wasn't always as honest with myself as I become more and more as I continue to do this work. So, you know, I thought I was real right 2 years ago. I was real right. Now I'm, you know, last month I was much righter than I was 2 years ago. Today, oh, I'm just right as I can be, right? And the truth is, I'm just so very human. And working really hard at making my faith bigger than my fear. Because still, listen, let me tell you something. When the man you love is throwing everything out the bedroom window because he thinks he won the lottery and we don't need this anymore, there's a little bit of fear involved. Because brain surgery is no joke. That's all I can say for sure. Brain surgery is no joke, and healing is a glorious thing, but time takes time, in case we didn't hit that one earlier today. Time takes time. And if nothing changes, nothing changes. So sitting in my discomfort, I have worked the steps, carried the message, shown up what I didn't want to, made agreements to do things I didn't think I wanted to do. And through that whole thing, every day of that, I have miraculously been pulled forward. God speaks to me in echoes and patterns. And I was speaking to a sponsee earlier this week about dealing with her mom. I'm sure none of you have issues with your mother, and God bless you. I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about who my mom is, who I thought she was. That's one of those things where the more inventories I do, the more not right I find I am, and the more human and fabulous my mother becomes, thank God. But I was telling her that when you walk into a room where you are the only one who's read the 12 steps, or the only one who's got recovery in any form, you are surrounded by a force field of good and God. You are carried. The big book says, if we're going for the right reasons, we can go anywhere and do anything and be taken care of. Right? We can go to the buffet, we can go to a bad neighborhood. If we go with the right reasons, and we go with the intention of carrying this message. And then later that very day, someone sent me a prayer, a meditation, where they talked about the force field. Now, when those things happen, when those echoes and patterns happen, to me, that's God on the other end of my path going, keep going. Good job. Keep going. And then I think, oh, good. Okay, I will. And then I find out the miracles aren't always pretty or delightful. Sometimes I work for people I don't really like. Sometimes I'm doing work I didn't think I wanted to do. Sometimes the sponsee's calling when I don't want to pick up the phone. I don't have to do anything that I have talked to you about. I get to. I love my life, even with a wacky boyfriend and a defunct business and a new little tiny house and people in my life who really think you're too skinny now. Yeah! I mean, no, I'm not. You know? Even when stuff isn't going the way I thought it was supposed to. So here's my thing. This is very often how I start my leads in both programs. It's not going to look the way you think it should. But that doesn't mean it's wrong. And in fact, I would offer that God has a much better imagination than you do. That is the best possible news. We stand at the gateway of infinite possibilities every day. If you make that decision and then walk that walk. That's all I got.
Did you handle the comments and questions?
Yeah, I did.